you're going furniture shopping. You're not going to buy a plastic yard chair. You're going to buy that big lazy boy sofa that makes you feel good and comfortable. And that is what Taylor Swift is. She is a big lazy boy sofa in a world full of lawn chairs. And
I really hope Taylor Swift hears that someday.
You know, me too.
Welcome to 1989 to Forever, a podcast dedicated to uncovering how and why Taylor Swift has weaved her way into not just music history, but American history. In her 33 years of life, Taylor Swift has accomplished a lot. She's broken 92 Guinness World Records, of which 16 times she broke her own record and regained it, and 73 remain unbroken. She's credited as a writer for every single one of her songs. She's the youngest ever to win a Grammy for Album of the Year. She has the most American Music Academy Awards of all time. Her Reputation Tour was the highest grossing tour in US history. She sold over 50 billion albums. I am not exaggerating when I tell you I have to scroll for several minutes to reach the bottom of her Wikipedia page of awards and accomplishments. Her accolades and extensive discography are loved by millions and billions of people worldwide. Yet, there are still many who say and categorize Taylor Swift as overrated, auto-tuned, boy-obsessed, naive, and more. Maybe you, listening right now, are one of the people who don't enjoy Swift's music at all. I'm not here to tell you that you need to blast Taylor Swift's music, make her your top artist of the year on your Spotify Wrapped, or even like her music in the slightest. Instead, I'm here to talk about how Taylor Swift has and always will escape expiration dates because she is more than a successful artist. She is a smart entrepreneur, talented songwriter, and bold female leader. By the end of this podcast, it is not my goal to make you love Taylor Swift, but rather I hope you discover a newfound respect for a woman who has undeniably made herself one of the most, if not the most, important musicians of our lifetime. Today, I'm joined by Cole Bearlocker, who, while not a self-proclaimed Swiftie himself, the term that we use to describe Taylor Swift's diehard fans like myself, he shares an appreciation for her impact in and out of the music industry. So, Cole, could you tell me a little bit about your journey listening to Taylor Swift?
You have to start from the beginning with this, right?
Yeah, for sure.
You know, I just remember I was probably 8 years old, and my mom and dad would not buy us like iPods. You remember like the little like nano ones?
Yeah, yeah.
But my rich cousins from Florida did have iPods and had the entire Taylor Swift debut album. And I remember listening to Picture to Burn on her iPod Nano. No, that was my first introduction to Taylor Swift. I wouldn't say my love from there grew. It just kind of drifted away, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I just didn't pick up on a lot of her music. Shake It Off music video was another good moment for me, too.
Yeah.
That's kind of where I think things started to, like, reconnect with me. And
so 1989, yes. Like, that was the era that you came back?
Her pop moment.
Okay.
Yeah, that was when things started to mend between Taylor and I.
You broke up for a little, and then you came back.
We went our separate ways, but we were united in the long run. You know, that was just like radio gold. Like, there was hardly a song on that album that wasn't
no on skips.
The radio. Yeah, absolutely. I'm blanking on the Reputation song. The Look What You Made Me Do. Like,
oh yeah.
That's when I started to realize, like, the mastermind of Taylor Swift.
So you said you liked the debut, yeah. And then you kind of went away for a while, which is offensive to me because Fearless is my favorite album.
Yeah.
But why do you think you, like, came back to her in 1989? What was it about mm-hmm. Taylor Swift that brought you back in?
Yeah, so I grew up only listening to pop radio. Like, that's what my dad would drive us, like, to school in the car. So, like, if it wasn't on Z Fun 106.1, I wasn't going to know the song. And I just, like, I would have enjoyed country Taylor, but like the country music stations weren't playing enough Taylor Swift, I don't think, for me. Like if it was 24/7 Taylor, I would have definitely been a Swiftie.
And yeah. You recently went to the concert in Dallas. Yes. How was that as a lukewarm Swiftie?
Went with like one of my best friends who is a Swiftie, like diehard through and through. And I told him, I said, listen, if you cry, I'm going to have to walk away. But I cried. And so did he. It was that good. I was like, wait, what is happening?
Wait, you cried at the Taylor Swift concert?
Yeah. The entire atmosphere. Like, you are immersed into a world of Taylor Swift. And you have no choice but to love it.
I actually want to talk about the fact that the Eras Tour is groundbreaking in the fact that no artist has ever, well, first of all, very few artists have as much as she does in her discography. Like, I mean, she's got everything.
Cher does.
Okay. I'm so sorry, Cher. But Taylor Swift was in the middle of her Lover tour when the COVID-19 pandemic hit. And so that tour obviously didn't get finished. And then she came out with three more studio albums and two re-records in the time that we were not able to do any stadium tours. So she and a lot of other artists were left thinking, like, how do we present this to our audience? How do we present it to our fans still? And I think she's genius for coming up with an idea that would bring every single facet of her fan base back together. Like, the Eras Tour is probably something people are going to copy forever because it gave her the opportunity to give a little bit of, you know, her debut to people that thought they would never get to hear those songs live again.
I will be honest, that was when I kind of like really did not like Taylor Swift for some reason.
Wait, you didn't like her during COVID?
No, I refused to listen to anything.
So you didn't like Folklore or Evermore?
I didn't listen to them. I don't know why. I was just caught off guard by the cottagecore, like,
like folk music.
Yes, I was just so like, what is she doing?
Yeah, you wanted 1989.
Yeah, because now I'm like, oh my gosh, this song is so good. Like,
yeah, Champagne Problems.
And well, I'm still not a huge, like, I like Champagne Problems, but like, I'm gonna listen to August all day every day.
Oh yeah,
that is my song on Folklore.
So like I said, this podcast episode is all about showing Taylor Swift's ability to escape expiration dates. And what I mean by that is that she's not just a trend that has passed through, like an artist that will be forgotten in a few years' time.
I think, sorry to interrupt, but I feel like there's this new thing in the music industry where it's like there's 15 seconds of a song that is pure gold and it's great. And
it's a TikTok sound. I think that, you know, that's something that even the Taylor Swift haters could agree on, that she's not going anywhere. Like, she's going to be an artist that our kids listen to. She's going to be an artist that is around forever. And so as a person who has grown to love her and sees her value outside the music industry, Cole, why do you think she is one of those artists of our generation that we'll always listen to and we'll always talk about? Or if you really want to get Swiftie with it, why do you think she will never go out of style?
Oh my gosh.
You hated that, didn't you?
A little.
Sorry.
You know, like I said, I just think there are some artists that are meant to last. And like I said, with just this like change in the music industry of like these 15-second sound bites, like that's personally not something I think Taylor Swift has or ever will subscribe to. Like, don't get me wrong, she has songs that are shared on TikTok that are very popular, but the entire song is just pure gold. And that's something that I can really appreciate, right? It's like you're going furniture shopping. You're not going to buy a plastic yard chair. You're going to buy that big lazy boy sofa that makes you feel good and comfortable. And that is what Taylor Swift is. She is a big lazy boy sofa in a world full of lawn chairs. And
I really hope Taylor Swift hears that someday.
You know, me too. But I just think, like I said, in this world when sometimes substance or like purpose or intentionality is lacked, that's something that Taylor Swift really brings. And not only, she just brings it in a way that's so masterful. The way that she crafts her songs, like there's a golden thread, the way that she builds her albums. Yeah. It's so cohesive. And, like, it honestly reminds me of, like, old days in the music industry or, like, I don't know, just the singer-songwriter in her is just so amazing.
Something else that I think is really unique about Taylor Swift, and someone told me the other day that it's very similar to like the Marvel like comic fandom. Yes. It's she creates her own world with her fans. One of the ways that she does create that community, that fandom, that other world of you feel like you are a Swiftie. One thing that she does that is new, I don't think Cher has done these, is the Easter eggs. Did Cher ever do that?
No, Cher never had. Cher maybe never she did that. I don't know. I don't know enough about Cher. Yeah. I just think she's a music legend and an icon.
No, she is. I'm not discounting Cher at all here. We love Cher. But these Easter eggs, so for those of y'all that don't know what Easter eggs are with Taylor Swift, she will drop hints in interviews, on her social medias, in album covers sometimes. Yeah. I mean, she'll drop them everywhere. So it's like you're constantly on edge with her because you never know what Blondie is up to. Yeah. You know, you gotta be on your toes.
Yeah.
But she drops these Easter eggs literally years ahead of time. Mm-hmm. She has admitted to that. Like, she has plotted things years ahead of time. Like, the Eras Tour itself, I think, is a result of the pandemic, yes, but I also think that she's been planning that for a long time because she had this house that she used in a lot of her promotional material in, like, 2020, and it had all these different colors, and people were like, okay, that color is Lover, that color is Debut, that color is 1989, that one's Speak Now. But then there's other colors that we didn't recognize, and they ended up being Folklore, and they ended up being Evermore, and they ended up being Midnights. And so she had been planning these albums for a very long time. But as a big fan and a big Swiftie, like, you're constantly wanting to consume media about Taylor Swift because you want to be in the know. Like, it's part of this club almost. There's just so many things that she does to draw you in and make you part of her world.
True crime level super sleuthing that some of these Swifties will go to.
For so many reasons, she escapes expiration dates, but I think it's the genre breath. It's the 78 billion streams. It's the Easter eggs. It's re-recording her albums because the original albums, for those of y'all that don't know, again, she re-recorded Red as well as Fearless in the past year and a half. 2 years, I guess now, because Scooter Braun, who was her producer, I guess, I don't even know what his actual title was. We don't care about him. I hate Scooter Braun. Once the contract was up on those albums, she began to re-record them and re-release them as Taylor's version so that she was getting all the profits off of it and they were her own again. And that's another testament to the diehard Swifties, because who re-records an album and every single song of songs that we've already heard for a decade go to the top of the charts? And no longer will you find Red, Scooter Braun on the charts at all. Like, people are only listening to Taylor's version because they care so much about her. She is just real in her lyrics. Like, I don't understand how you can be so famous and still write such relatable lyrics. But she just is able to create this world. And I didn't realize it until I said it out loud during this podcast that I think that's why she will live on forever, like 1989 to forever.
Yeah.
Literally the name of this podcast, because she has created this world where we feel so intimate with her in every single song in her lyrics.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Cole, for joining us today on 1989 to forever. Before we go, though, we're going to start our podcast closing tradition of listing your top five Taylor Swift songs.
My number one right now is Bigger Than the Whole Sky, which
that's so sad.
Is one of my...
Are you okay?
Yeah, I am, but it's just like, like kind of like the Cineverse, the Taylor Swift Cineverse. I'm putting myself in that mindset of like, me and my lover, we have to part ways, but it'll last forever. Number two, which is a happy song, is August. Like, I am trying to have...
August is not a happy song.
Okay, but it's more bright than Bigger Than the Whole Sky. I don't know. It is sad.
It's a girl that gets used.
What? But the tune is happy.
That shows that he's not... I didn't bring him on here to just be a diehard Swiftie with me. But
number three is White Horse. That was my freshman semester. at Washington State. That was my cry song. My number four would have to be Teardrops on My Guitar.
Oh.
And finally, number five is Death by a Thousand Cuts.
Yes.
Which is the one I got to see live.
Awesome. Well, thanks for listening to the debut episode of 1989 to Forever. Stay tuned for our next episode to explore Taylor Swift as an activist in episode 2 of 1989 to Forever during season 4 of Podcast for Aggies, available on Apple Music and Spotify. We'll see you next time.